It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Moving along into the 5 o'clock hour, Adam Hill is here. Steve Cofield, Cofield and Company. Damon on board as well, steering the ship. Little UNLV breaking news. I got another commit out of the transfer portal, a backup point guard, Jace Whiting. We'll tell you more about him towards the end of the hour. I like the pickup. I don't know if everyone will. Adam, trucking along. You got a call in sick, man.
Work. There's work to be done.
Stop. Miles Simmons is with us. Miles, how you doing, buddy?
Good Lord, I'm better than Adam.
He's been just mauled today by allergies.
Bro.
He's the two on the VGK game tonight for the paper. Call in.
Yeah,
it's
dude.
It's not about the game. It's about you got to get quotes.
No one else in the world can get quotes.
Well, how would you do it if you're on deadline? You can't really go in the locker room.
I don't know. Someone else can do it.
Who?
You're sick.
Who? I'm not sick. I have allergies.
Is he sick, Damon?
That work needs to be.
Your mic's on.
That work needs to be done was one of the worst sounding things I've ever heard.
What are you talking about? It's allergies, bro.
That's what I'm saying, man. Miles. Like, I don't know. I'm like hundreds of miles away. Yes. That sounded horrible. Yes.
There's difference between illness and allergies. I mean, it's beating me up. There's no question about it, but
No stuff, Sherlock. Oh my gosh.
No stuff, Sherlock.
I mean, my goodness, Adam. Mm. As a friend and former colleague, you know, I'm a little concerned.
I'll get some.
You really?
I'll get some allergy medicine on the way to the game.
Please do.
Be all right.
Get a little. I get you some Flonase, some Claritin. My God,
it's all hidden behind the counter. You got to ask them to go get it for you. It's a whole nightmare to go to the drugstore.
I know it is. No, well, they don't keep the Flonase behind the
they
counter.
They keep everything behind the counter.
Vegas, maybe they do in Vegas. I don't know. Yeah. That's different here.
Literally everything. Ship it. Okay. Ship me some.
Oh, yeah. I'll FedEx you some. We'll get that thing there for you.
So let's start where we usually close. And let's start with what do you guys have on tap here? Like, what's it like for you? Where are you going to be? How big is the Peacock coverage? I'm guessing starting next week for the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I will be in Los Angeles. That's not something that is a big deal for me. I mean, it's interesting because going to the draft is not like going to other league events because, you know, you get the day one stuff and yeah, the draft picks come through and they have a press conference. But, you know, once they get picked, then they're really more or less the responsibility, let's call it, of the team that picks them. So, you know, from a national perspective, I find it to be a lot easier if I'm just home and I can watch it and then I can see the press conferences that happen with the local markets or they put up the conference calls and all that. I think that those in some ways are more valuable than what goes on at the draft proper. So that's one thing, but yeah, I'll be here in Los Angeles. I don't know that I'll be on Peacock next week. I think that's a Shireen Friday. But I will be on this Friday, as we really start to get things ramped up with our coverage. I'll be on PFT Live, so you can catch that on Peacock, or then of course all the clips will be on the NFL on NBC YouTube page as well.
Miles Simmons, I don't think we gave you a proper intro. Pro Football Talk. He's up at Miles A. Simmons.
On blame
Twitter.
Adam for that.
We tell everyone about everything on the show. We pull back
That's
the curtain.
Okay.
So
shouldn't people know? If people are listening at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, shouldn't they know who is talking by now?
Oh, wow. Ooh, wow.
I mean,
okay.
Big time.
I mean, but like, no,
he's a regular.
I've
Miles Simmons is with us.
For like years.
That's
like,
true.
It's not.
That's a good point. That's a good point. We're a little late on this one, but since you are a Peacock guy, I wanted your reaction to this. As a headline, Packers to play Eagles in Friday night game in Brazil, week one. So now we've got an even more crowded week one. So where do you want to start here, a Friday night game or the fact that it's in Brazil? Where do we go?
I think all of it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, the fact that it's a Friday night game, it's because the calendar falls in a certain way where the Friday is, you know, the first Friday in September or something, and it's right after Labor Day and la la la. I don't really quite understand all the mechanisms of it. I should, but I don't off the top of my head. I probably will more once the schedule gets released in a few weeks or whenever it is. But I think it's going to be interesting, you know, the fact that we have, A, the kickoff game with the Chiefs hosting that, and whoever they play, that's going to be an interesting game. And then, you know, the next night, you get a couple of teams that are very interesting going into the 2024 season. I mean, if the Eagles don't get off to a good start, it's going to be very, very loud for Nick Sirianni very, very quickly. And, you know, I don't know that they've got kind of a ready-made solution when it comes to head coach on that coaching staff. Whether, you know, you could say Vic Fangio, yeah, he's got experience. Kellen Moore, he has been up and coming for a while, but that should be Nick Sirianni's team, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And with the Packers, I mean, that is the definition of an up-and-coming team, right? I mean, you've got a guy in Jordan Love who showed that he can be a franchise quarterback, so I think that that's a really interesting matchup. And the fact that you exported it to Brazil, I mean, I don't know. I can understand why Eagles and Packers fans would not be the most thrilled about that, the fact that their teams are, you know, not going to be in the continental United States to open their season. But if you can afford it, it's a hell of a trip, you know, for an opening weekend of the NFL season.
Do you expect Brazil to be a regular stop for the NFL?
I kind of do at this point. You know, the NFL wants to keep growing things internationally. And from everything that I have heard and read and all that, Brazil seems like a natural market for the league to expand into and play there on a regular basis. So, yeah, the enthusiasm has been really significant, I think, both from an ownership standpoint of wanting to get something like this done, and then it seems like the fans down there are pretty excited about it too. So, you know, this is something different, going into South America and doing things like that. So, I think that it certainly could be more of a regular thing coming up.
At some point, are we going to get to a level where basically every team has an international game, and so we'd get rid of, you know, the uneven schedule? It's 8 home, 8 road, 1 international, and then nobody has to host, quote unquote, the international game.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I mean, it's probably going to take several more years to get to that kind of point. But I think from like a media standpoint too, then when you have all these international games, you could almost sell an international media rights package, and then that would be something where, you know, instead of networks bidding on the individual thing, as you know, Steve, you mentioned that Peacock is going to be carrying that game between the Packers and the Eagles. Then you get, you know, basically where it was like Thursday Night Football. All right, let's sell this package. And then, you know, NBC, CBS had it, Fox had it. Now Amazon Prime obviously has it, or Prime Video, whatever they want to be called. So I do see this becoming more of a thing where teams play internationally, and you have the 8-8-1, and you're hosting sort of that international game, and it's more on a neutral site. But, you know, what's interesting to me too, Adam, is that you've got a lot of team owners that want to play internationally, right? It's not just, oh no, it's a punishment, blah, blah, blah. It's they see the opportunity for growth and another market for fans, right? And another, that means that you can get more revenue, you can sell more merchandise and all these different kinds of things. So, like the Chiefs, for example, they want to play in Germany again, you know, before however long. And Mark Donovan, their president, has said that. And that, I think, is a bit of a shift from where things were, let's say, in, I don't know, 2014, like 2016, where it was more of a punishment, or perceived punishment, if you will, that you have to go over and play internationally. Like the Rams, when they moved to Los Angeles, they were playing in a temporary stadium. They had to go and play internationally. Same with the Raiders, as they were doing their deal going from Vegas, going from Oakland to Vegas. So I think it's more now that teams realize the kind of business opportunities that there can be with international games. And so that's more or less why they're more interested in doing that.
Miles, I want to ask you about Caleb Williams, because Greg McElroy said with Kevin Clark that Caleb hasn't experienced enough adversity, that he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. Is that a problem with number one picks? That he's been good too long. He hasn't been a loser all of his life. Do you think that's going to affect him in the NFL?
Not really. I mean, the thing that I thought was maybe the most funny out of that was Caleb Williams' response included, "Didn't start my freshman year," as if that was some sort of adversity. I'm like, what? Not starting your freshman year, bud. Like, that's not, I'm sorry. Like, that wasn't adversity. And not
He's
only
been
that.
He's been through it, Miles.
Come on. Oh, you went from Oklahoma to Los Angeles. Oh, so much adversity. Well, actually being a black man at Oklahoma, maybe he should have cited that as his adversity, because that's more adverse than like not beating out Spencer Rattler as a true freshman. And then you come in and then, you know, you help beat Kansas and all that. And like, your career takes off from there. So like, the not going through adversity stuff like that, I think, is a little bit overblown. I think more it's, is Chicago going to be the right situation for him? Right. Is Matt Eberflus going to be the right head coach for him? Is Shane Waldron going to be the right offensive coordinator for him? And if Shane Waldron does a really good job and he ends up getting a head coaching position, is the next offensive coordinator going to be right for Caleb Williams? Like, all those things, I think, have much more to do with whether or not he's going to be successful than he's not gone through enough bad things in his life. Like, what does that even mean? I don't know. Did Joe Burrow go through that much adversity? Like, because he lost a starting job and then he went
ACL, to right?
LSU.
Did he get hurt in college?
Yeah, I mean, okay, but like is that?
I would say when I first heard the comment, I thought it was silly. And then, as you pointed out, when you hear Caleb Williams' answer, now you're like, maybe there is something. If that's who you think adversity is, maybe there is something to it.
Sure, yes. I think that there is such a real thing as adversity and overcoming things and overcoming obstacles. Like, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, but yeah, if Caleb Williams is saying, like, not starting my freshman year is one of the worst things that's ever happened to him, like, that's not much.
Why? I don't know. As we shift gears completely, I feel like you're more of a traditional person, so maybe you fit this, but why do, like, old school and traditional media fight back on social media being important things? Like, Brandon Ayuk unfollows the 49ers, and people are like, oh, yeah, it really matters. Like, yeah, it does matter. It matters. Those things matter. Stephon Diggs likes a tweet that says, the Bills fans are the worst fan base. Yeah, he means it. It matters. Like, those things are – it's not – people don't just use social media frivolously. Like, it is important to a lot of young people.
You're right. And, you know, I do sometimes sort of push back. Like, I'm one of the old –
you're an old soul. I know.
I am. And I'm like, oh, God, okay. We got to talk about him unfollowing the 49ers. And Florio, to his credit, is more or less on those kinds of things. And he thinks that they are more important than I think. But sometimes they really are indicative of the way people think and feel and all that. And, you know, I mean, the Brandon Ayuk unfollowing the 49ers thing, like, he's still showing up to work. So, I don't know. But I think likes sometimes tell the story a little bit more. So, like, because I use likes to subtly show people what my preferences are. And if, you know, you go into my likes, you will see a lot of things about me and, like, the things I think are funny or things I think, you know, sometimes politically, la, la, la. And I may not be tweeting about that, but, like, I put it. I know that likes are public and, like, I kind of don't care.
By the way, so, both Damon and Adam immediately to the phone to see what's on your like list. I will tell you personally, I got a borderline tongue lashing from Adam Hill probably about 6 years ago, because he said a lot of people were noticing when I would like something.
Yeah.
Like, using it the same way you did. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to do it anymore. Now I'm only going to do it in gregarious fashion. So I've cleaned up all relationships that I would like something that might be sort of negative going at someone.
You know, I don't know. The things that I have liked right now, some of them include the definition of insurrection. Mm-hmm. My friend Ken Carmen from Cleveland saying that they need to add Cleveland to the WNBA expansion list. Mina Kimes tweeted out a joke of a text that's like how the Commanders are being a little bit weird with having all of these different quarterbacks in at the same time for a top 30 visit.
You're very excited that Trevor Bauer's getting lit up in the Mexican League?
I am also excited about that. I think that guy's a bit of a scumbag.
I like that Miles tried to disarm all of us by just freaking machine gunning all of his recent likes. Like I'll do them all so they can't find him.
Who do you side with in a Childish Gambino versus Kid Cudi beef?
Well, you know, probably Kid Cudi, if for no other reason than we are from the same Cleveland suburb that is Shaker Heights. So I'll go with Kid Cudi.
All right. It's time in the program, that time, for Adam Hill's bevy of Travis Kelce and maybe Swift stories. First of all, Miles Simmons. Adam, what's going on with Kelce in a game show?
Yeah, he's going to host the Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader reboot.
Yes, yeah. Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity on Prime Video? Yeah, the Prime Video loves the Kelces, man. I'll be almost a little surprised if Jason Kelce doesn't join that broadcast team in some sort of form or fashion for Thursday Night Football. It'll be interesting.
Will you watch? By the way, I saw people like, he's not a game show host. Jeff Foxworthy hosted the first one. Who cares?
I mean, yeah, come on. Like, what is it? What game show host? Oh,
the integrity of the game show.
Right. Drew Carey became a game show host after he took over for Bob Barker.
Yes.
I mean, would anybody have really thought that Steve Harvey would be a great game show
host?
First
of all, he's not.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
He's not.
He's
great. No. Are you kidding me?
You're crazy.
Welcome to Family Feud, everybody. I'm your man, Steve Harvey.
So
it's great.
It's in snippets. It's a TikTok show, an answer, him making a crazy face, and then a crowd laughing. It's so set up to do that though.
And Who cares? It's formulaic. It's beautiful. I love it. You know, I put it on if I'm trying to go to sleep. I can't sleep. Whatever. You know, the best part about Family Feud to me, it's like a race war in every single show.
That's true, actually. It is.
Hey, what happened?
It's fantastic.
It's always black family versus white family.
Oh, it is?
Always.
Or like family of color versus white.
And then it's like, let's ask a bunch of questions to make the white people look just completely ridiculous. I love that.
Yes.
It's like, they don't know. they don't. I'm sorry. The thing I hate about it, which I've said many times here on the show, and I will say it, is they'll be like, 100 people were asked, what does your wife wish were bigger on your body? And they'll be like, I guess, you know, it? Like, what? Like, that you asked a question to get somebody to say that. What are you talking? Yeah. Why are you shocked by that?
It's all innuendo. So and, bad. You know, it's basically a scripted crowd reaction.
It's so bad.
Well, it's like watching Hell's Kitchen in some way, right? Like, you understand what it is that you're in for when you turn the show on. It's part of why I love Hell's Kitchen. Gordon Ramsay's gonna cuss out people, you know. People are gonna get mad. Somebody's not gonna be able to cook the scallops right. You know, it's fantastic. I don't know.
I was way too active. I'm dizzy now.
Yeah. You really got him worked up there over Steve Harvey, Family Feud.
Get that man some Claritin stat.
Last one. I try to watch some of the ESPN programming every morning just to basically steal topics. Between First Take and then Greeny's show, but especially on Greeny, today they were doing their daily draft game, which is have a quarterback going somewhere that you might not think they're going. Are the Giants going to take a quarterback at number 6? Mel Kiper has the Giants taking one at 33 in Bo Nix, but could they freak out and also try to get a quarterback in the top 10?
I don't think Bo Nix is going to last that long. But I also saw Peter Schrager today had in his mock draft the Giants trading up to 4 and they picked J.J. McCarthy. So I could certainly see the Giants selecting a quarterback, whether it's early, whether it's, you know, doing something where you have to trade up, whatever. I don't know if they'll do that. But I think the team's kind of soured on Daniel Jones a little bit. That's kind of the vibe that I get, and they understand that, you know, he really did not play well, and he's also coming off a serious injury. And so when you have those couple of things combining, and you also have Darren Waller kind of like being like, I'm just going to wait and see who you draft, and he's not explicitly said that, but that's the vibe, again, that you sort of get with the way things are going over there for him to decide whether or not he's going to retire. Like, I think that it would behoove them to find a franchise quarterback, especially because if they don't and they go out and they stink up the room again, I think that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll could both be on the chopping block. So they need to do something to inject a little bit of life into that offense and into that franchise.
What's the biggest thing you're watching on TV right now? Any series?
I'm rewatching Succession, okay. And I've been playing a lot of MLB, the show 24. That's basically what my life has been lately. It's not very exciting.
Watch Fallout if you haven't seen it. They drop a nuclear bomb on LA and lots of other places, but it's very much focused around LA.
I will
LA.
Not be watching that. That is far too close to home. I'm not a big disaster movie or like TV show person anyway. Like, it was very tough for me to watch The Last of Us because I know it's good objectively, but like that kind of stuff, it gives me the heebie-jeebies, man.
This one might be better.
You're missing out. Walton Goggins is amazing.
You know what? I've been watching the latest season of the HBO show with him and Kenny Powers.
Yeah,
thank
Righteous
you.
Righteous Gemstones. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that show's really good. I'd rather watch him than that.
Miles, we appreciate it. Thank you.
All right,
see
guys,
you later.
Talk to you next week.
I was really hoping he'd go off real quick there. He's a moron. He needs to watch the show. I didn't know the Goggins guy's name. I just know that he's been in everything.
Vice Principals?
He is really good in this.
Oh, so good.
One of the many ghouls.
I watched it in
so
one night.
So good. You did?
Yeah, one night.
No spoilers.
You've believed in the Knicks for a while. We have seen what they've done. But then guys like Barkley and Shaq, they kind of like dismiss the Knicks.
Because it's obviously they don't watch basketball. They can't watch basketball.
I love it.
I'm serious. They can't watch basketball on a consistent basis.
Now back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
All right, good sound pull there, Damon. Will Barkley respond by saying he's going to punch Perkins in the face, which generally is his response?
I don't think he will.
No, I don't think he will either. Andre Snelling's is, I can hear him in the background chuckling. I hope he considers, you know, size when he has these threats about punching people in the face. How are you, sir?
Yeah, Perk is a big dude. quick story. Like, the first time I met him, I was in Las Vegas, out your way, in Vegas for the summer league. I was standing in the tunnel behind the game action, and LeBron James was there. It was when he was first coming to the Lakers. So he was up the tunnel. Perkins was trying to get to LeBron. He's calling out, "Bron!" And he's like almost running directly at me. And now I'm not a small dude either, but I'm like, yo, man, like we got to pick a side, bro. If not, this is going to be a clash of the Titans. So yeah, I don't think Barkley wants any parts of swinging on Perkins.
You didn't take the charge in that situation?
Hey, dude, I'm not getting paid 7-8 figures. You know, yeah. Taking a charge is putting your life in your hands. You need some high-risk insurance policy.
That clip was on New York Radio with Michael Kay. Follow up. Are the Knicks relevant?
They are relevant. You know, they're not as relevant as they would have been if Julius Randle were healthy. We only got to, I think, 14 games with both Julius Randle and OG Anunoby in the lineup. And the Knicks were nigh unbeatable. It was like the whole month of January. They went 13-1. They stomped out like the Celtics and the Nuggets and the Timberwolves. I mean, like they were really beating up on teams. And so, you know, unfortunately, we won't get to see that this year. But Jalen Brunson is still playing at all NBA level. And since Anunoby's come back, they just win. You know, their defense is scrappy. I think they've only lost three games that Anunoby has played since they traded for him out of like 25 games. And so, you know, they are a team that's tough. Now, it would be bad luck for them if, honestly, whoever wins the game tomorrow is going to be a tough matchup. The Miami Heat, not based on what we saw in the regular season, but, I mean, obviously every year in the playoffs they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals 3 of the last 4 years, the NBA Final 2 of the last 4. And so, you know, that would not be an easy first-round matchup. And honestly, with Embiid healthy, the 76ers, if Embiid is healthy, I mean, it's still a big if, they could be as good as any team in the NBA. So neither is a great matchup for the Knicks, but they're a scrappy squad, and so you should at least be paying attention to what they're doing.
Do the Knicks have that, let's say, Tom Thibodeau curse of overachieving in the regular season, but they're maybe just going to fall short in the playoffs?
It's possible because Tibbs does get his team to play at a very hard, very high level pretty much the whole season, which is difficult in an 82-game, you know, marathon of a season. So there's two things with that. One, you risk your team burning out, particularly because he doesn't have a deep bench. He always has a relatively short rotation, and so he plays his guys a lot of minutes and he hasn't played at a high intensity for 6 months, effectively. So you could see some burnout by the playoffs. But more than that, I think other teams maybe aren't playing at 10 every night. And so if the Knicks are playing harder than other teams, they might scrap out some regular season wins that way. And they don't get to do that typically in the playoffs. Now, last year in the playoffs, they did. They just outworked the Cleveland Cavaliers to win that first-round series pretty easily. So, you know, there's still something to be said for putting in the work. But it is, you know, there are some limitations when it comes to just talent. Now, they might be getting lucky that the Eastern Conference talent is all either injured or not quite playing up to expectations. So they might still be able to make a run to at least the conference finals. But once they start playing teams like the Celtics and whoever comes out of the West, it's hard to see them being able to beat those teams 4 out of 7 games.
When you talk about who could be in the finals, the odds right now will suggest that we don't even need to play the playoffs. It's Boston against Denver, and it's going to be Nuggets and Celtics in the finals, and that's what we're going to watch. Like, is there any reason to believe that's not going to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, like Baldu said about Barkley, have you watched basketball? You know, like,
Adam, answer honestly, year. Not really.
No, NBA, no, not really.
Yeah, well, every year in the NBA, there are always storylines. Somebody gets hurt. Yep. Something, you know, a guy who normally plays at a really high level plays, you know, struggles a bit. Last year, the Nuggets went through the playoffs easily, right? They weren't even really challenged. And part of it was because they were playing so well, but the other part is, frankly, they didn't face any team that had a front court big enough and defensive enough to give Jokic any pause whatsoever. So he was able to just run roughshod over everybody. You know, Anthony Davis in the Lakers, he's a strong defensive center, but he's just too light to deal with Jokic. And so this season, potentially, depending on how it plays out, they could have to go through the Timberwolves, who have Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns. That's a potential second-round matchup. They could have to go through the Lakers in the first round. We just said Anthony Davis ain't big enough. But the Lakers are still the Lakers, so that's still not an easy first-round matchup. And then they might, you never know, but if it's Boston, they've got a lot of talent all the way around. And if it's, say, the 76ers, Joel Embiid is big enough to give anybody pause. So, you know, the Nuggets could very well have a much more difficult path this year than they had last. And then in the East, you know, the Celtics, they when they made their offseason moves for Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday, there was a sense that, hey, this team can be really, really good. But there were also the sense that the Bucks were going to be really good after trading for Damian Lillard, that you know, if Embiid was healthy, the 76ers could be really good. You know, all of the teams, the Heat, they're always a move away. And in the regular season, all of the other guys took 1 to 2 big steps back due to injury or other issues, whereas the Celtics actually played the expectation. So they ended up winning the East by like 15 games, and it looks like it's a blowout. Like you said, like you don't even have to show up. But once the playoffs begin, and particularly if some of the injured players are able to be healthy, those are teams that can give Boston pause in a 7-game series. So I wouldn't pencil them into the finals just yet.
Again, we're talking to Andre Snellings here on Cofield and Company, and you can follow him on Twitter at Professor Driz. I want to talk about the Laker matchup right now because they're up 11, maybe 12 if LeBron makes his free throw against the Pelicans. How do you think they will fare if they're able to get that 7 seed and play Denver, because that's the tough matchup. But when it comes to the Lakers, would they be better off of maybe being that 8 seed and taking OKC?
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about that. I think it was practically, you know, it was a non-starter effectively in the locker room, because for the type of players that are competitive at this level, you know, especially LeBron's and Anthony Davis's of the world, you can't avoid any team if you think that you're a championship caliber team yourself. Andrea Carter on ESPN Airways this morning, you know, she summed it up like you can't run from the smoke. You know, you got to want the smoke. And so, you know, I think that in a different world, a perfect world where you could hook up all the different Lakers front office and coaching staff and players to a lie detector test, and say, if it happened organically, would you rather have faced the Thunder than the Nuggets? Yeah, probably they would have rather faced the Thunder because they've kind of owned the Thunder this year, and their size works to their advantage against the Thunder. But, you know, it didn't work out that way. And, you know, part of the downside, besides the just angering the basketball gods, the downside of the Lakers trying to lose to the Pelicans and then win the next round is that just like they struggled against the Nuggets, they struggled against both other teams in the play-in, right? You know, the Lakers are 3-1 against the Pelicans, and their three wins were all blowouts, and so they feel like they can beat them. But they're 0-4 against the against the Kings, and honestly, the Kings beat them worse than the Nuggets did in all four games this year. And then they're 1-3 against the Warriors, and their one win was a double overtime 1-point victory in a game they were down 8 points going into the fourth quarter. So it's far from guaranteed that they could win that next game. So it's much better for them to take the bird in the hand and then just, hey, strap them on. Say, you know, Jokic and the Nuggets, we play basketball just like y'all do. We've got rings just like y'all do. And let's go out there and try to make it happen.
Well, a complete tangent, but since you name dropped her, how great is Andrea Carter? Like, she's becoming really, really good at this.
She is wonderful at this. And I love, you know, I love her analysis, and I also love all of the shine that the women's basketball, NBA, NCAA is getting right now because their product is excellent. I've been covering them for years now and just watching as a fan. And so Andrea's glow up and the NCAA glow up and the WNBA glow up, I'm here for all of it.
Real quick on the WNBA, Steve's becoming a big Chicago Sky fan. Did you like their draft last night?
I loved their draft last night. For them to come out with both Cardoza and Angel Reese, you know, I mean, obviously Caitlin Clark is the story of women's, really, of sports. Not just women's basketball. She's kind of the story of sports right now. But Angel Reese and the LSU Tigers did beat them the year before, and then Cardoza and the Carolina Gamecocks, led by legend Dawn Staley, beat them this year. And so these are two players that were both most outstanding players of the tournament, and I think Angel Reese might be my favorite basketball player, or at least women's basketball player. So I too will be paying a lot of attention to what's going on with the Chicago Sky this year.
I wanted to look ahead to the closeout here at Milwaukee and the Pacers, and obviously the health of Giannis is very, very concerning. What do you think is going to happen this series? Can you even give a pick without knowing where Giannis is? And my partner here, Adam, was suggesting in the first hour that this is more evidence that management of your playing time, especially when you have an injury that's been lingering all up and down his left leg for 6 weeks, all these people who don't like load management, like, this is a good example. Now he may not be ready and 100% for the playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's a good point on the load management. I've been one that, quick shunt away with Joel Embiid's injury. I was watching the game when he went down with that injury, and he had been, you know, struggling. Everyone knew his knee wasn't right. He was playing in the game. He was kind of dragging it around, but he needed to play a certain number of games to be eligible for the MVP, which he was absolutely going to win, in my opinion, based on the way he was playing. And so I've been vocal that I don't love the load management rules because I don't think that they help. I think that the people that they're designed to get on the court are not the people that were going to be up for MVPs and all NBA teams anyway. So, but that's a tangent. When it comes to Giannis, I think and more, I guess, relevantly, the Bucks and the Pacers, I think the Pacers beat the Bucks 4 out of 5 times this year with Giannis. And they're just a difficult matchup stylistically for how the Bucks play. But in a weird way, and I always say, don't take this wrong, because Giannis is probably I think he might be the best player in the NBA, you know, when he's healthy. So I'm really high on Giannis's game. But in some ways, they might match up a little better against the Pacers without one of their 7-footers out there, because the Bucks play this big lineup with 2 7-footers and like a half-court style game, whereas the Pacers just get out and run. And, you know, they throw outlet passes to half-court, and Halliburton is running, and they're shooting threes. And Brook Lopez is a great defender at the rim, but you get him out of the three-point line, he's a fish out of water. And so playing with Portis or Lopez, you know, kind of one or the other, they might be able to play more of a modern style without the two traditional bigs. They're a little bit more, you know, established, a little bit more athletic. Portis plays really well off of Damian Lillard. He's you know, been a strong finisher, showing he can put up 25 points when he's called upon when Giannis isn't playing. And it also lets Lillard be Lillard. You know, he doesn't have to fit in next to Giannis. He can just go out there and try to make it Dame time for 48 minutes. So I think that it should be a very entertaining series. I think that Giannis's injury is kind of going to be, you know, over the whole thing in the background, the elephant in the room, much like it was last year when the Heat beat the Bucks in the first round. So I'm hoping at the very least that the Bucks are able to acquit themselves well, because it just like leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth when you're like, well, yeah, you won, but, you know, the best player in the league or in the game wasn't playing. So, you know, I'm hoping for the best, and I think the Bucks do still have a chance.
Andre, excellent spot. We know you're a busy guy. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, fellas.
There is Andre Snellings. So, I don't know why I said I saw a discussion this morning. I'm not even sure how serious to take it. It actually may have been from yesterday. There was a discussion about Dame Lillard that this could be one and done in Milwaukee. That didn't work out. If that was the case, and now they've got Doc Rivers locked up with this silly contract. They went 17-18 with Doc. Like, who are we mad at? Because I will go back to that podcast that I watched, All-Star Weekend Up Close with BBW, Big Brian Windhorst. And that discussion amongst those folks was, well, Giannis is in control of most of what goes on. Like nothing's happening there without his approval. So, like, what's the reaction in the Milwaukee community? It's like, wait, Lillard's not working out? And Doc's been terrible or mediocre? Does anyone turn on Giannis, even though he's a superstar and carrying the franchise? Like, bro, this is, in a way, those moves right there, if Lillard's not working out, this is kind of LeBron-like over the years when he's had, you know, essentially had GM power.
GM Giannis, just like GM LeBron, is not the best. The player is better than the GM.
What really hurts is that Jrue Holiday is crushing in Boston. That's what really hurts.
That was such a gift, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's on the market. Okay, I guess we'll take him. Like, when you saw the candidates to potentially get him, you're like, Boston's going to get him. So power becomes superpower. One other thing with Andre there. You know, I'm going to save it. I want to talk about, he's breaking down the playoffs, talking about Denver, and we're concentrating on big fella, right? Jokic. And it's like, what bigs do this team have? What bigs do this team have? Are they big enough? I thought big men didn't matter anymore.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Closing out a Tuesday 60-50 at the half. Lakers on top of New Orleans. Every Thursday, Cofield and Company on the road at Stadium Swim, Circa Las Vegas. All the sports you want on the 143-foot screen at the best pool venue Las Vegas has ever seen. And by venue, it's just the sports atmosphere out there is incredible. If you do want to upgrade a little bit, Daybed Cabana, go to CircaLasVegas.com. And we're there every Thursday. Hang with us and party. And especially as the weather gets nicer here, it's going to be a wild and raucous scene each and every Thursday at Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas. Damon Cofield and Adam. I wanted to build on one comment I made at the end of that block with Andre Snellings. As he was going through how teams can beat Denver, it's like, do they have enough size? Size, 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 size. You know, it's funny, people, because they're so used to big men being not coveted, that when they were grading Donovan Clingan at UConn, and especially Zach Edey, NBA. Yeah, NBA. Now, I'm not saying they're both going to be freaking 20 and 12, but they have big bodies. And Edey may look a little clunky sometimes, but he's getting better. They're going to have value in the draft.
I think Klingon is looked at as having value for a while. Edie still is not.
He's slotted to be a lottery pick by one of the draft experts on ESPN.
That'd be pretty stunning. But
yeah, there were rumors about Utah being really fired up to get him.
I mean, that's like a tradition. That's like Mark Eaton. They're like going back to the old school, turning back the clock.
Weird thing about Utah. Can we get in the bag?
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Hockey market.
Wait, they are going to Utah now? Like next year? I saw something today. I thought there's a possibility. Maybe I read an old headline. Are they going to be there next year?
Supposedly.
Okay.
What's the confusion, Steve? Of course.
I thought we all knew that. I swear I must have clicked on something old. I was saying they're going to need a little more time before they go. But I know Marullo does have the right to get back into the NHL if the opportunity is afforded by the NHL. So that'll be interesting. Speaking of the state of Utah, very loosely, I'm going to tie it together with Jace Whiting, who just put out on his Twitter handle that he is committing to UNLV. He is Mormon. He did serve a 2-year mission, so that was my connection. Interesting guy. A little older, first class, pretty strong kid. I saw one listing, had him at like 160. He ain't 160. So he's probably about 190. Strong dude. I liked what I saw a couple years ago when he actually played. This last year he didn't play. So I don't know. What do you think? Clearly backup point guard for DJ. And now the premium is on what? Wing? Has to be wing players? Still, we think in on Josh Jefferson. But Jefferson is visiting TCU, and Frankie Collins just went to TCU. Uh-oh.
I feel like Jefferson goes wherever DJ goes.
Are we still discussing DJ leaving?
Well, that could be here.
Yeah. Well, the way you just said it, it was
you're like,
wait, is he leaving?
Well, no, if it's here, then...
You think he's locked in?
I think so.
I don't know. These are good schools he's visiting, and he did cancel his visit.
I thought he was visiting TCU.
Good school from a money standpoint. TCU is a solid basketball program. Jamie Dixon's done a good job there.
That's fine.
It's also, wants to be there.
I think I've said it on the air. It's one of the five schools I applied to because we got a high school.
Okay, so then why the shots?
I didn't go there. Turned them down.
Okay.
I don't know what.
I don't think that's how you consider it. I turned them down.
Back to Utah for a second. BYU did not hire Chris Burgess, did not hire Barrett Peary, the UNLV assistant. I'm going to just take a leap of faith that Peary might have had a connection with Whiting, but we'll follow up on that one. They went with an NBA assistant, Kevin Young, who's actually interviewed for like 8 NBA jobs. One of the highest paid assistants in the NBA from Salt Lake. And now he's the BYU coach.
Clearly it's a Chris Beard situation. Dream job.
I don't know. I haven't seen him make a comment on it. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Dusty May in Michigan, in on everyone. Do you have high hopes?
Yeah.
I will throw one wrench into this, but they still haven't landed both of the guys from FAU.
Oh,
so the big center in Vadislav Golden, and then John L. Davis is the point guard. They're also in the mix. Danny Wolf hasn't decided yet from Yale.
I think there's a pretty strong hope that he'll be back in New Haven.
Oh, really? I don't know how you would know that. Trey Townsend, he's kind of down the list, like what, fourth, fifth best player on Oakland?
Player of the conference?
Best player, and Adam was getting crazy when Golkey was getting all the attention. He's on the radar for Michigan as well.
It's right down the street.
But he is visiting Arizona, Ohio State, and Louisville.
That's where Gulkey is visiting, right? That's not where Trey Townsend is visiting.
I hate to break it to you, but Ohio State is very dangerous.
No.
I don't think it was just Ryan Day who got a big war chest. I think this Diebler guy, I think Ohio State is very tired of not being at the top of both games, men's basketball and football, and they're like,
Trey's
we're
a Michigan guy. We'll take them.
We'll take them. I don't think it's a matter of you're going to take them.
We'll take them.
And I got to close on this one.
He's just living in Jack Golgi's shadow. Why would anybody want him?
Great, great stories. Good guys always finish first in this case.
Huh?
Grayson Allen, who is by far, even ahead of Draymond Green. Is he ahead of him? The biggest thug in the NBA. Now his thuggery can go on forever. He's been guaranteed. He got a guaranteed deal of $70 million with the Suns. Man, that's a guy you want to root for. Congrats, Grayson.